I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne's website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises four reports from management, one item of general business. No apologies have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes the decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of meeting number 22, held on Tuesday, the 3rd of October? Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Riley, I'll put that matter. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? In that case, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Planning Permit Application for 19 to 23 Errol Street, North Melbourne, an item of correspondence from Angela Williams. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Planning Scheme Amendment C307, Gaming Policy, requests to speak from Stephen Main, the Alliance for Gambling Reform, Anna Bardsley and Gabriella Byrne, and items of correspondence from Stephen Main, Anna Bardsley and Gabriella Byrne. In relation to Agenda Item 7.1, post-travel report by Councillor Susan Riley to Chengdu in China, requests to speak from Chris Thrum, an item of correspondence from Chris. I advise submitters that you are invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee. We stick to that 3 minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind us. Beeps sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining, and we ask you to conclude your address when that final beep sounds. In accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, we provide a 15-minute period at the beginning and the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask us questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. This is not the time to make submissions. Submitters are invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. Would anyone like to ask us a question? In that case, agenda item 6.1 has been withdrawn. Could I call on Councillor Rees to assume the role of chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are three reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. The first of those is agenda item 6.2, which is a ministerial referral, TPM 2017-13. It's 2 Melbourne Quarter, Stage C3, 681 to 691 Collins Street, Docklands. Would councillors like a presentation about this proposal? I take that as a no. Then I, as the Chair of Planning, am very happy to move the motion, which is now on our screens, and I look to a councillor to second that motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppart. Let me speak briefly to this proposal before us. It is, of course, Stage 3 of the Melbourne Quarter development, which is truly historic in its size. The total Melbourne Quarter development is worth about $2.5 billion. It's 130,000 square metres of new space in Melbourne. It's going to involve 12,000 workers when it's complete. When they write the history books of Melbourne about the economic and business epicentre of the city moving towards the water, this Melbourne Quarter will be seen as a significant step in that move. In terms of the proposal before us tonight, the size of the building program and the public realm are all within or in accordance with the approved development plan. I'm very pleased to report that Lendlease has worked closely with the City of Melbourne to achieve and a design that references the Heritage Victoria listed goodshed, which is a wonderful bit of our history down at Docklands, and also the activation of Aurora Place on the other side of the building. I'm particularly delighted that Woods Baggett, a local architect, are behind this building, another great outcome for our local architect and design sector. And I particularly like the use of bricks at the street level, which I think is so important to making Melbourne a great city which works at the eye level. Also think the use of retail at the street level is terrific for street activation. Finally, I note that it delivers more office space for this city. I believe AMP have recently taken out a tenancy in this precinct, so they join, you know, National Australia Bank, Commonwealth Bank, ANZ, Mercer, and many others who are now forming what is a very powerful financial and professional services cluster in Docklands. Who would have said that just 10 years ago? So, yes, I fully commend this recommendation to Council. Councillor Leppard?
I agree.
Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against the motion? Okay, in that case, I'll put the motion to the recommendation to a vote. All those in favour say aye. Yes, take that as unanimous. We'll move quickly on to the next item, which is 6.3, planning permit TP 2017-407. For the property 19 to 23 Errol Street, North Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this permit application? Take that as a no. I would note that there is a amended recommendation 8.2, and I don't think I will read that out, but I would ask the council to note that as part of what's being put to council this evening. Okay, given councillors do not want a presentation on that item, I will put the... I'm happy to speak to it, and I'd look to somebody to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppard. This is an application that was put to council retrospectively seeking approval for the construction of external alterations, painting and strip signs on the ground floor of this lovely heritage building on Errol Street in North Melbourne. The council has identified a number of key issues that of concern around what has been done on this building, particularly as it relates to heritage, the impact on the streetscape and visual clutter, and the amount of visual signage is considered excessive and distracts from the character of the area. The yellow cladding panels are not consistent with a heritage graded building. The colour is garish and it just does not add to what is one of Melbourne's most beautiful historic shopping strips. The recommendations before council are that the company receive permission to have signage on the front of its building, but that signage be significantly reduced by some 80%, and there are a number of other significant alterations which are required, which will provide visibility into the store and also not detract from the heritage features. It is particularly disappointing, I've got to say, what the Chemist Warehouse has done here. You know, I think it's like putting an ugly clown's mask on a beautiful grand old dame of a building. I can only say I wish they had come to council first before seeking to do this. And in many respects, the message here is to all retailers, particularly big corporate retailers who are coming in increasingly into these parts of the city and putting up these or proposing to put up these sorts of signage. Councillor Leppard?
Thank you, Chair. Again, I agree. It's quite clear that what's currently there is not compliant with the scheme, but in a facilitative planning process. This planning permit does allow some signage, albeit heavily reduced, as you say. Can I also thank you, Chair, for calling the matter in? I think it's important that we do shed some light on these issues. I'm quite sure that the extent of non-compliant signage around the municipality is probably not just limited to this site. We've had a submission to this meeting about other buildings on Errol Street, and certainly these things need to be looked at in the context of planning enforcement. Of course, these are all separate issues to the proposal that's before us today. But I want to thank the submitter for bringing various issues to our attention. But that submission hasn't been circulated to the public yet now, so I won't speak to it at length. Thank you as well for the improved recommendation. Now that we are calling this matter in and discussing it in open, I think it's good and proactive, but also quite a positive way of going about ensuring that the non-compliance of signage with the planning scheme can be dealt with in a cooperative manner. We do have a pre-application process at Council that can assist property owners and developers with this issue. Certainly our aim is to make sure that particularly on heritage buildings and in significant shopping strips, which Errol Street is one, as you say, Chair, that we are ensuring that the amenity of those strips and the sympathy with heritage buildings is something that is managed appropriately. With an 80% reduction of signage on the site will once again be compliant with the scheme. So hopefully we will see that outcome as quickly as practicable. But thank you again for calling it in, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any other speakers for the motion? Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Look, this is at a strategic level a very, very big decision, because this is the collision between corporate universal branding and a company like Chemist Warehouse and the necessities of local character and how you balance those two. And we've seen multinationals like McDonald's, who at first were quite intransigent about how they would brand, alter their branding, particularly when they're on heritage buildings, and therefore have kind of shown the way. And so it is a very big decision in strategic terms. The pre-application addition at 8.2 by the Chair of Planning is, I think, a very important one. And again, if I could point to an anecdote of a very great success story. When Sneaker Boy decided to open in Melbourne in Little Bourke Street, at first they wanted a brick blank frontage to the street. And the city said, well, look, that's not what we want in terms of visibility and permeability. And in that pre-application and during the process, we negotiated with Sneaker Boy to have a glass brick solution and almost a tunnel entry solution, which is very elegant and doesn't detract from their retail offer, and yet was not where they began in terms of presentation to the street and respect for the street. I don't think it's entirely without worth mentioning that Sneaker Boy was named, that store was named as one of the top 10 retail designs in the world 2 years ago. And that happened as a result of a consultation with the City of Melbourne during their design. So it goes to a very, very big issue. But nevertheless, I think we should fight for those local characters, even when people tell us that this is our brand and that's all we have. That's certainly not what our officers have done here, and great credit to them. Delighted to support it.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to officers and also yourself for bringing this. I think it's horrendous. Frankly, the design of the store. I get that it's corporate branding, and I get that that's part of the whole sort of brand proposition of Chemist Warehouse, in that because you're a discount warehouse, you're going to have branding that looks cheap, because that is part of your brand, that if you had expensive-looking branding, then that sort of flies in the face of your brand. But I agree with the Lord Mayor that there's lots of examples of major corporates actually working with that local character and even with heritage to have really fantastic outcomes, and outcomes that actually become quite iconic in terms of their stores around the world. The other issue with this is sort of one of equal opportunity in terms of the other stores that are complying in the precinct, and indeed one pharmacy that's complying with the signage requirements in the precinct. So I think this idea that you know, this brand can come in and effectively use the front of their store as a billboard is a little bit unfair when you look at the compliance of other stores in Errol Street. So I think this is a good conversation to start, and I hope that that Chemist Warehouse come to the party on it.
Thank you. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Chair. I support the recommendation in front of us. I acknowledge and thank Chair for bringing it to us. Obviously, when it comes on the agenda papers, I read it and go, oh, Errol Street, what's this about? You know, an area that I'm quite fond of, and this was there at the spring fling on the weekend. But I had seen the branding on this particular building, and I didn't even think about the fact that there was official processes to amend it, even though I know that there is heritage protection, and we do especially have protection on of important shopping strips like Errol Street. But I guess I acknowledge that I saw it and thought, oh, you know, what can we do about this, you know, over branding. But so I acknowledge that this has come to our attention, because people in our community do actually know that there are processes and protections and have gone through the proper process of I guess essentially making it a complaint and bringing it to our attention, and it's resulted in the report that we receive tonight. So I'm glad that it's come to our attention that we can actually make sure that these shopping strips that are important because of their character, not just of their content, in our municipality can be protected. And I think 8.2, as the Lord Mayor pointed out, is a good addition, because there is a process that can be undertaken by shops, businesses in our municipality to make sure that they do comply and that we don't need to go through this retrospective process again, hopefully. But as the Deputy Chair, Councillor Leppard, has pointed out, I'm sure there actually are a few businesses out there that actually fall under suspicion as to whether they're complying at the moment. So be interested to see if we see further reports like this to the Planning Committee in the future. But I support the recommendation tonight.
Are there any other councillors who wish to speak to this motion? Look, I would just pick up on the point made by the Lord Mayor and yourself, Councillor Oak, that in regard to that last additional recommendation, it obviously goes to Chemist Warehouse, but really it's a reminder tonight to all retailers that we do have a pre-application process here at the council. We do have a policy in place, and we are vigilant about enforcing that. And one of the things that makes Melbourne such a special city are those wonderful heritage shopping strips that we've got, and this is a council that's going to protect them, and we're not going to tolerate garish facades that take away from that wonderful retail experience. So on that note, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. Delighted to say that's been carried unanimously. Next agenda item is 6.4, Planning Scheme Amendment C307, Gaming Policy. Would councillors like a presentation on that matter? I'll take that as a no. We do have some folks who would like to speak to us, though, so I'd now call on Anna Bardsley to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, Anna. Thank you, Shane.
Thank you. Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors, for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Anna Bardsley. I'm a retired businesswoman and a recovering poker machine addict. I'm the mother of 5 children, 2 of whom have died. And when my marriage was in severe difficulty because of life and being in business with my now ex-husband, the place that I went to for relief, for escape, was the pokies. I left one night after a particularly bad argument. It was 10 o'clock on an August night, raining and cold. And where else do you go? What else is open? the pokies is open. So I went there and I sat down, I put some money in the machine, and the machines did what I now know they're designed to do, which was to soothe me, to calm me. And that night, I spent more money than I meant to, and I stayed longer than I meant to, and it was the first of many. Over a period of 10 years, I poured a mammoth amount of money and all of my self-esteem down the whole of those machines. The shame and stigma that went with it made it almost impossible to ask for help. The responsible gambling campaign made me worse. The problem gambler label made me worse because I thought I was the problem and it was just something I had to fix. And now it's now over 10 years since I put any money in a machine. And I call myself a recovering poker machine addict because if I go into a venue now, the machines still have the capability of triggering the pathways that they developed in my brain all those years ago. And I no longer think about gambling at all. I don't consider myself a gambler. But I go in there for a meal with friends and I hear the jingles and the sounds and the lights and my brain says, oh, somebody's getting a free spin. Oh, look over there, the jackpot's going to go off. Now, I take responsibility for what I did, for going there, for not looking after myself, but I did not sign up for that. I did not sign up for those dangerous, toxic machines to hijack my brain. I've spent the day today with Stephen down at Parliament House talking to politicians about the new bill that's coming up, and change has to happen. And I commend you for what you're trying to do. Do what you can to get the dangerous machines out of the places that are most where the most vulnerable will go. And that's all I want to say to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anna. I now call on Gabriella Byrne to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Gabriella.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, everybody here, to give me the opportunity to talk to you. My name is Gabriella Byrne, and I had a hot, passionate love affair like Anna with the poker machines many years ago. It cost a lot of money. I lost a lot of friends, almost my marriage, and I contemplated suicide on many occasions. Now, it took me 4 years of trying to get through this emotional roller coaster through therapy and relapse until I stopped. Now, since then, and that goes back 1997, I have devoted my life to be at the bottom of the cliff, trying to catch the people, trying to help people through various programs to get their lives back and to enjoy it for what it's worth, specifically in a beautiful city like Melbourne. So I'm very excited to have the opportunity to thank the Lord Mayor personally because he funded last year. We had the opportunity to run one of our programs here. We had wonderful food and amazing staff who looked after us and made the people in this group feel like there was something. There was something to this city. And I believe that I commend you on the steps you're taking because not every council is so proactive to look at the damage this product does and to do something about it. But I believe that we can do more. And I think we need to do more on all levels. There are measures out there that we as people who have been affected would really like to see happening. Not that it would get rid of problem gambling, I don't say that, but what it would do, it would minimize the harm, not to the people, but very importantly to the families that suffer, because we know from research that 1 in 10 people suffer if one person has a gambling problem. And I'd like to just leave you with one of the examples that come to my mind about a product that was dangerous. Can I finish that one or do I have to go now? Okay. I just heard the beep, so I thought, oh, this is winding me up. If you think about many years ago, there was a story in Queensland where somebody tampered with Panadol, you know, the painkillers. So somebody tampered with it and nobody died from it, but people got sick. And what happened? We took the product off the shelf, we made it safe by putting wraps around it, and put it back. Now, I believe there's measures like introducing the $1 bet limit, like restricting some opening hours so that people who are vulnerable can't access the venues consistently, 24 hours. These measures would help. And as I said, not just the individual, but also the people that love them and want them to be the responsible members of a family that they used to be. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Gabriella. Our next speaker is Stephen Mayne. Now call on Stephen to speak to Council for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillors. Nice to see you all, and thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm working with the Alliance for Gambling Reform in a part-time role, and our job is to try and minimise gambling harm and get some reform in the country that's got the biggest losses in the world. So $23 billion a year, and poker machines are about $12 billion of that. So when it comes to gambling harm, Australia, world record holders, and pokies are the key. So obviously in the city of Melbourne, we've got the biggest pokies venue in Australia at Crown. $300 or $400 million probably a year lost on their pokies, we don't know. And obviously there's your own specific data from the other, I think, 11 venues in the city of Melbourne. So we're delighted to have the support of the city of Melbourne as a tier one member of the Alliance for Gambling Reform, along with 11 other councils. And really impressed with this policy. Very detailed work by the officers. I think Dean Griggs and your colleagues, very comprehensive planning scheme amendment, making it more difficult to apply for more pokies, and strongly lobbying for caps and other measures. So that is great, but the bigger picture here at the moment is actually that we're in the fight of our lives for legislation that's going to lock in $70 billion worth of losses with a business-as-usual approach that the state government has proposed with legislation. Now, one of the MPs we met today, we met eight different MPs from across the political spectrum, and one of them said, if you want to get some change, we need to be hearing from councils. You know, we need to be hearing from external stakeholders. We need to be hearing from people who've been affected. They're looking for change. They're on the backbench, and they're looking to persuade the powerful, you know, Treasurer, Premier, Attorney General, the decision makers, and they're saying, get everyone you can find to get on the case for change. So in addition to this excellent planning scheme amendment, which it is, I just encourage you to, this Friday at the MAV State Conference, support the three strong pokies resolutions that are going up. Go public with your own views about $5 maximum bet coming down to $1. You know, be critical of the fact that if you're looking for somewhere to go at 2:30 tomorrow morning, there are 70 Woolworths venues open in Victoria at 2:30 tomorrow morning. That they are deluging harm and misery on the community. And ultimately, it is politicians who have allowed this highly permissive regulatory arrangement and are proposing that it be thrown forward another 20 years until 2042. The Tasmanian licences are expiring as well. Every other state has perpetual licences. The Tasmanians have had a parliamentary inquiry, 240 pages, very comprehensive. We are rushing into reform, into new legislation, no parliamentary inquiry, and we need to buy time and we need your help to try and buy time, get up a parliamentary inquiry, and then get some sweeping amendments to this legislation. So well done on what you're doing tonight, but please step up, if you can, in the hour of need to affect the legislation at Spring Street. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Now call on a... Well, sorry, as Chair of Planning, I'm happy to move the motion with the recommendations which are on the screen in front of councillors. And I call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. I'll speak briefly to this matter. Firstly, I just want to thank Stephen, Anna and Gabriella for coming in and addressing us, particularly Anna and Gabriella. I think what you've done tonight is a very brave thing, and we need to hear, the Victorians need to hear the stories that you've told so that we can get a sensible set of arrangements around pokies in this state. I also would like to concur with Stephen Mayne that I think that what was before Council tonight in terms of this policy with the decision-making framework that accompanies it and the proposal to for the Planning Minister for a planning scheme amendment is a very balanced, well-considered and sensible proposal. In terms of the planning scheme amendments, these are very common sense suggestions that involve improvements to venue design, things like removing the visibility of the machines from the street to try and curb compulsive gambling behaviour, gaming behaviour, creating separations inside venues so that other activities other than gaming are not happening in the same area where gambling is occurring, and also having other activities such as food and beverage inside venues. All of this will help in help us in achieving what is the ultimate goal here of minimising harm that occurs to our community. There's another feature inside the policy which I think is worth noting as well, and that is the call for the City of Melbourne to advocate for the extension of the regional cap to the areas of the Hoddle Grid, South Bank and Docklands. It is a quirk of the gaming regulatory arrangements in this state that those areas are the only geographic areas in Victoria which are not subject to a regional cap of 10 machines per 1,000. The regional cap was introduced by the Brax government in 2001. It was a very sensible measure, and frankly, at the time that policy was introduced, it made sense that the City of Melbourne, or the Hoddle Grid, South Bank and Docklands, not be subject to the cap, because at that time there were very few people living in those areas, certainly nothing like the 50 to 60,000 people who now live in those areas. And because that central part of Melbourne has very much become a vibrant community where human beings live, those people who live in that area should be subject to the same protections as others who live elsewhere in the state. It's interesting that the cap of 10 per 1,000 would actually result in those areas haven't actually reached that cap at present. I think there's about 8.9 machines per 1,000 there. So, in fact, if the cap was introduced, there would be scope for the number of machines to increase. But importantly, such a measure would be an insurance policy against future growth in those machine numbers, and I think that's quite important. So I support the policy, and I support the seeking of authorisation from the Minister of Planning for the exhibition of the Planning Scheme Amendment. Councillor Lepak.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I agree and would like to thank our submitters, especially Anna and Gabrielle. This recommendation before us implements a unanimous decision of Future Melbourne Committee some months ago to commission this planning scheme amendment and the accompanying decision-making framework, as well as a fantastic policy basis that's formed both, which is found at the final attachment. So can I add my thanks to all of the officers, especially the Urban Strategy team, alongside Dean Griggs' team, who has led this policy project. In some ways, this is coming to us a little bit late. I would love to have been able to update this policy so that it applies to the entire municipality rather than just the areas outside the central city, which the current policy in the planning scheme applies to. But I'm delighted that we are in a position to seek authorisation of the planning scheme amendment now so that we can guide better siting location of EGMs throughout the entire municipality and not just outside the Hoddle Grid. It needs to be emphasised, of course, that planning scheme changes apply to future planning applications, and so this is not a retrospective thing. One of the most frustrating things about signing up to be a councillor is that issues like poker machines, for obvious political reasons, are guided by regulatory frameworks that have taken the core decision of whether or not there should be EGMs in a particular place out of the hands of elected councillors and put it into a much more systematic process. The Gambling Regulation Act certainly permits pokie machines quite readily. All we can really do is guide their location. It's very difficult through the local planning provisions to prohibit new gaming machines, and certainly if we were to seek to amend the schedule to the clause, I don't have the number in front of me at the moment, to try and outlaw poker machines in streets and shopping strips and venues across the municipality, we would not be able to proceed the amendment because it would fundamentally contradict the regulatory framework that's set up in the Gambling Regulation Act and elsewhere. So all we can do is be as influential as we possibly can to ensure that poker machines aren't enticing residents from the street, that they aren't located in very vulnerable demographic areas that have been identified, again, through this fantastic piece of research that's been done to accompany this report, and seeking to minimise harm as much as possible within the role that the City of Melbourne as the planning authority can do. So, of course, I'd like to go a whole lot further. Of course, I'd like to have the power to disallow new electronic gaming machines in the City of Melbourne. We do not have that power. What we do have is the ability to create a policy like this. I wouldn't like to conflate the issue too much with the bill before Parliament at the moment, but of course, for the reasons that have been articulated by the submitters, I don't agree with the approach taken by the state government, but we should be very clear that we are kicking off a planning scheme amendment today to change the local policy in the planning scheme and make a few consequential changes. If we conflate that issue too much with the other issues, certainly the strategic justification for this planning scheme amendment might be undermined, so I'd like to re-emphasise that I support the proposed planning scheme amendment in and of itself and separate that decision from my other comments about poker machines, which I'm sure most of us do share. I also agree with the advocacy cap. The separate to the planning scheme amendment process, we've got this decision-making framework which includes advocacy on a variety of issues. That's where we are talking about our dissatisfaction with some of the announcements by the state government. We use our membership of the Alliance for Gambling Reform to advocate these roles, and it's very important that we are a member of that organisation, and I'm glad that we are. And, of course, as the Chair, you've mentioned advocating for the application of a cap to the central city as well, particularly now that we've seen so many people move into that city. This is a very dense community, and we should be doing everything that we can to make sure that gaming machines, even where they do need to be approved due to processes outside our hands, are located in such a way that harm is minimised as much as possible. So I'm delighted to support this. And thank you again to all of the submitters who have reminded us just how important this issue is.
Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any further speakers for the motion? Councillor Watts.
There are. Well, clearly there is furious agreement on council that that gambling is an issue. This is a planning matter, but it would be remiss, I think, for us not to mention in any discussion around the changing demographic in our city. It would be a shame not to mention that so many of the residents and those coming to the city every day are young. We have an extraordinary number of tertiary students, and they are vulnerable, and they are being presented with this opportunity to engage in a pastime which will cause harm. I'm in agreement with my colleagues who have already spoken about how important it was to hear from the women tonight, a very brave act, and I would like to make mention of a rally that's going to be held in our city on the 31st of October between 10 and 11 at the steps of the Victorian Parliament. Women are particularly vulnerable, as we've heard tonight, women and young people, so we have to do all we can to stand up. I think it's a great pity that we can't extend our condemnation of this particular form of quote-unquote entertainment to include the Crown Casino, but of course we can't. And what a pity that we can't influence government more than we already have on this particular matter. The addiction to the revenue from gaming is a concern to us all. So I'm very pleased to support this quite limited action that we can take, but it is very important nevertheless.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any other speakers for this motion? Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Chair. Look, in my time on council, I think there's three or four occasions, and I'll stand corrected, that we have refused an application for further machines to go into hotels or refuse them outright. So the city has a really good track record on trying to prevent further gambling machines coming into our city.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Oak.
I don't need to add too much. I support all of my colleagues' comments tonight. I especially acknowledge the hard work that has gone into this policy work, and I hope that it is endorsed and or provided authorisation from the Minister to prepare the planning scheme amendment. It might seem like a small contribution to, you know, a solution of this scourge on our community, but I think it's a really important piece of work and it is something that we can do. So let's, you know, grab hold of it. And I think from... even though it is or might seem a small contribution, what the City of Melbourne does so well, and I acknowledge our strategic planning team, is that, that's the right title, our urban urban strategy team, is that they produce these pieces of work that are underpinned by huge amounts of evidence and research. And for, you know, many members of our community, be that in an organisation or individuals that are equally concerned about gaming and poker machines, the amount of information and resources that this sort of document provides is, you know, is also an important contribution that we can make to further debates, including the one that we've referred to tonight, that this isn't about, but about the bill before Parliament as well, that the research, the information that we're provided through this process is a really important contribution to the debate as well. But like others, I'd like us to be able to do more than we can, but this is what we can do, and I really hope that you know, the Minister sees fit to provide authorisation to get to the next stage, because as we all know, planning scheme amendments take a long time, and things like this need to be done quicker than, unfortunately, the processes allow. So let's get on with it.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Are there any other... Councillor Leeloo?
Thank you, Chair. And look, Australians love a punt, and, you know, I'm no different. I've laid, you know, many, I guess, bets during, you know, major events. I've never touched a pokey in my life, but, you know, but I've seen firsthand how addictive it is. And, you know, most of my friends who do play, I never actually understood it. And it goes against... what Councillor Watts was saying about the young people. But I would actually go further in that gambling doesn't discriminate against age, race, gender, or anything like that. It just, there's only one thing, and that's the money from it. I think it's also another emphasis on the rise of technology, you know, and I've always seen technology as something that have helped us going forward, as either a society or anything else. But I guess in this instance, it's actually something that is actually reversed. And it's something that, and I think, the laws and everything has not catched up to what it's actually needed. So I think a lot of policy debate needs to be talked about, and I think, you know, this is a good step. And for one, I hope that, you know, this really does help the people living within our community.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Francis Gilley.
Thank you. Two things. First of all, thank you for the work that the office has done and the support of obviously all my colleagues. I think, but really, and particularly, sorry, thank you, Anna and Gabrielle for your, Gabriella for your story, and Stephen for your contribution. I'm speaking to kind of Stephen, your point about the request of, you know, support. What can we do? I'm a product of a private school education that was funded through pokey machines. My family had a company that owned casinos and betting shops, and so we made most of our money from gambling. One of the things I learned from my father is he said, you know, running a restaurants and running those businesses, that's gambling. Actually having poker machines, that's guaranteed. And so one of the things about them is that there is no choice. You know, the whole machine is designed to take your choice away, and it is guaranteed that you will return, the person who has the machine, will get at least 20 cents of every dollar you put in. So it's just time, right? You will lose. It's only time. The only way you can win is if you take $1 and do it once. That's it. After that, you're losing. So I think one of the things for me is to name the addiction. And the addiction, it seems to me, is state government being addicted to the revenues, the addiction of organisations like the RSL, which always really worries me because it's actually their members they're robbing. You know, the addiction from pubs, I think, you know, it's like you have a regular customer come in every single day and you're actually, you're milking them in a way that they can't control. So I think that's the addiction problem. I think then what's really pernicious about that is that we then have a state government that names it responsible gambling. There is no such thing, and there is no doubt that our residents and the citizens of Victoria end up suffering every single day because of our addiction. So I think anything that we can do for those of us who are in positions of responsibility is really important. And so once again, I thank my colleagues and the council officers for their commitment to making this change.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Kelly. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, and thank you for this work. I think we should remember our role and our history in this. We have variously objected, I think, to most of the applications that have come before us, certainly in my time. I can think of one that we did support because we thought on the basis of that it was a better configuration, partly because the machines were not in public view, one of the public policy outcomes described here. We lost on the meeting place, as I recall. When we did win, and if you think of the hotels that have applied to us, and they're detailed in the report, the Exchange, the Francis, the Queensbury, the Victoria, where we have won, and I take Councillor Watts's point, we made the point about tertiary students at the Victoria Hotel, and that was dismissed by the Tribunal as not being a relevant consideration. Where we have won, it's been around proximity either to social housing or disadvantage, or where there was a consideration that it was clustering. And they are the grounds upon which we should make our objections. We may have ethical or moral objections to all sorts of other elements in our community, but they have not been successful at the Commission or the Tribunal. So we should focus on where we have been, continue to do it in the way that we have, case by case, but also look to this sort of framework to say, here is a framework that will guide a consistent approach from Council to these applications that come before us, and that's why I'm going to support it.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion and the recommendation? Okay, in that case, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you very much. I now call on Councillor Sullivan to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the People's City portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. There is one report from management for consideration under the People's City portfolio. Agenda item 6.5, Domestic Animal Management Plan 2017 to 2021. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Yes.
One question I'd like to ask officers, and I've searched, and I'm sorry if I've not been able to find it. There is a kind of dual narrative here about the continuation of the dog waste bag program, dear to my heart, and in other parts of it, a suggestion that some people want us to move away to that from that to alternatives. What are the alternatives?
Evening, everyone. Thank you, Lord Mayor, for that insightful question. Thought it may have been about how many dogs or cats or pigs you may be able to own. We're not sure what the answer is to the poo bag collection at this point of time. The plastic bags that are out there at the moment that are biodegradable are also impacting to the environment. We've started discussions with all the surrounding councils that we have to see if there's any alternative that we can come up as a collective that will provide a better alternative than some sort of plastic or biodegradable plastic bag for everyone.
But is that the best at the moment? I mean, it's better than having dog poo everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're currently investing $80,000 a year in the disposable bags. We'll continue to do that. But over the life of this plan for the 4 years, we'll try to come up with a more sustainable option to provide all the pet owners in the city to be able to pick up after their dog.
Thank you. I'm happy to move the motion. I call for a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Watts. I'll speak to the motion. I'd like to thank the officers just briefly, as I think obviously the report And plan is quite straightforward. The proposed actions will maintain a highly trained animal management team, proactively promote responsible pet ownership, investigate complaints in the serious dog attacks, which I think is very relevant given that we've had 10 dog attacks in the last 12 months. It will also reduce euthanasia and improve rehousing animals. There are over 5,000 registered dogs and cats, as well as the 7 registered domestic animal businesses. And the plan involved 2 rounds of consultation with over 300 respondents. So I'd also like to thank the community for the input, because obviously with such strong community consultation, this is why the report is before us tonight. Would the seconder like to speak to the motion?
Thank you. Yes, it's clear to us all, I think, how important domestic animals are to our emotional well-being in Melbourne. It's not surprising that the increase in domestic animal ownership has grown in the city. We just have to find more creative ways to deal with the downside, because the upside is very clear.
Are there any speakers against the motion? Are they against or...?
With respect to dog motions, I think the issue that is important in this is it's the same as nappies. You know, it really creates really unstable landfill, and so you're putting something in a plastic bag, and that becomes actually dangerous in the sense that, you know, that's you then bury a lot of it together. So it actually, in terms of, you know, solutions, we are actually around the world trying to come up with better solutions for what we do if we're putting all this human and dog waste in the ground. So good luck with finding better solutions.
Councillor Oak?
I have notes, but I'm not. I obviously acknowledge all the submitters that have contributed to this. It's quite a significant number, I think, as Councillor Watts has identified. It's because people really like their pets or really hate pets. And I think that the DAMP... so-called acronym, finds a balance between obviously managing the pets from a nuisance perspective, but also making sure that we encourage and maintain the positive outcomes that pet ownership in our city provide. And in particular, I know that there's reference to reviewing the opportunity for dog off-leash areas and acknowledging that these are important spaces for the community to connect. Everyone gets to know, well, at least the dog's names. I don't know if they get to know their neighbours' names, but they all know who Freddie is and who Toby is, but I don't know what their owners are. But certainly it's a positive contribution, pet ownership, but we know that there are a lot of nuisances and management issues to consider. Not explicitly along the sustainability line or the discussion around the plastic bags, but I would be interested in the suggested enhanced reviews of cat ownership. And obviously it's about reducing the number of euthanasias, but also euthanized cats, but also managing nuisance cats. It'd be useful, and I didn't pick it up in the document, but I assume it will occur, in connecting with urban sustainability and in particular our urban ecology strategy, where we're obviously interested in biodiversity in the municipality, and we know that cats are the biggest threat to wildlife in Australia, and in particular birds, but other animals. And I am a cat owner, and I feel incredibly guilty about it. He's not allowed out at all, and he's got 7 bells, but I'm acutely aware. Yeah. So in that review... It is an important issue, and in that review of the cat ownership and management of cats, let's just make sure that the animal team is talking to our urban ecology team, and if there are opportunities around the education, particularly the education components within the DAMP, of interest to me. But I think that it's a very thorough review of our policy as per the Act, and something that we need to do, and I think we've done a very thorough job.
Councillor Riley.
Look, I'm a little bit iffy about dogs at the moment because I tripped over one on Sunday and I have 3 stitches in my leg. So, yes, I support this policy, but I'm not too sure whether I'm a dog lover.
Councillor Liu.
First of all, I wanted to actually put my thanks to actually the animal management team, because I actually lost my cat when at the start of the... I'm sure many of you guys remember that. Yeah, so it's a service that I think is very enduring, and I guess, again, emphasise the point of Margaret Chipping, and as well, which is actually in here. I think it's also the fact that it's great to see that so many domestic animals, there's an increase, because I do think... It's something that really do help, to the well-being of someone actually working in the city and everything, to actually have something out there. And I guess in terms of a solution to the dog's poo and everything, simple, get a cat.
Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the last comment of Councillor Elu. This proposal has undergone a three-stage process with the discussion paper, then the draft policy, and then a final round of public consultation following the Future Melbourne Committee meeting a couple of months ago. So I want to thank the very large number of people who have weighed in on this policy. Of course, every council needs to produce a domestic animal management plan and review it on an annual basis. I'm sure the next three annual cycles will be done under delegation, and this sets us up well for a four-year period. But again, yes, thank you for everyone who's made a submission. I'm particularly keen to see, and I'm interpreting it this way, that there's general support for the addition we made at the Future Melbourne Committee 2 months ago to make it an annual measure that we decrease the number of cats and dogs euthanised that could be rehomed to a consistent zero euthanasia rate as soon as practicable. That is a measure that's very strong, very clear, an improvement on the previous DAMP. It's not. It's going to be quite challenging to achieve that, and I don't underestimate the size of that challenge at all, but it's very important to me that we do that, so I'm glad to see that the feedback has left that action unchanged. Also delighted to see a new focus on unowned cat review to be completed by next year. That's a great improvement to the DAMP. The only word of caution I'd mention here, and I'm nervous to do it because if we think pokie machines are a political issue, that's nothing compared to the issue of whether or not a park should be dog on leash or off leash. I'm conscious that the people who have... fed into this DAMP would be pet owners, and of course they're going to be asking for more dog off-leash areas. Yes, in principle I agree with that as well, but we also have to acknowledge that it's not council's position or ability to provide in each and every part of the municipality a dog off-leash park. To be frank, if you have a dog, don't move to South Bank. Or if you live in South Bank and don't have the ability to walk the dog or don't have the time in your day to find a park and travel to it to walk the dog, maybe don't buy a dog there. So I don't want to set up the expectation that every part of the municipality has to have a dog off-leash park, but of course we should have more of them because companionship with pets is very important for the reasons that councillors have said. So I do support all of them. I just worry about that expectation. But of course maybe I shouldn't have mentioned the issue at all given how hot button it is. But thank you to the officers for facilitating this three-stage process, and I look forward to... the next one in 4 years, if I'm re-elected, if I run again, you know. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers for Lord Mayor?
I've been drawn into this now. First of all, I'd point out that the off-lead is a difficult one. I'd point out to councillors that very, very recently we increased off-lead areas in Yarra Park by nearly 2 hectares, which is an appropriate area for it. On the other hand, we then worked for something like 5 years in West Melbourne to develop an on-lead, off-lead. So it will really depend on the locality and the particular nature of the area. Secondly, in a very personal one, I think we need to do a lot more education of our community about the fact that dogs rushing at people, whether they're on skateboards or bikes or just walking, constitutes a dog attack. It doesn't have to be a bite or an attack like that. Simply rushing constitutes an attack, and many owners don't know that, and that can lead to very serious consequences at the local government level. So there's an area of education for us. And the final point I'd make, and I very rarely disagree with Councillor Leppett, but I would read a part of this policy to say we may in the short term see more cat euthanasia than less, far away from zero. And that is not just because of the unowned cat review that's going to go on, but also because of the feral cat colonies and the suggestions in here for greater capture and therefore inevitably that will be euthanasia. So I hope that is a hump that we get through before we move to not euthanising animals, but I think we have to recognise you have a particular problem with cats at the moment and that will need to be dealt with in the next few years, and this policy outlines that may well be the difficult but unpalatable fact.
Councillor Rees.
It's amazing what dogs and cats can do to people, including councillors. So look, as somebody who lives opposite and in a city park and is also a dog owner, hello Banjo, I just want to make an observation. There are a lot of dogs that do a lot of poos in inner city parks, and that is a very not cool thing. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I'm building to something here, Lord Mayor.
This has gone to the dogs.
And I think it's a wonderful thing that all city parks which allow dog access should be having bags that are available. And the commensurate measure that accompanies that should be an increase in a fine for those misanthropes who allow their dogs to crap in our parks and do not clean up the mess. And while I'm not proposing an immediate change to the policy today, I would say that this will be something that we should revisit in next year's budget.
Are there any other speakers for the motion? Well, I'd just like to conclude that obviously it's great to see the passion. You learn a lot about people, you know, the banjo, the seven bells. And Dean, I'm really looking forward to perhaps having a follow-up meeting, a very thorough poo toilet training options for pooches. And perhaps even we could look at some sort of international review for best practice just around it as well. But anyway, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you. There is one item of general business. Could I now call on Chris Thrum, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to the matter, which is post-travel report by Councillor Susan Riley to Chengdu in China. Chris.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. This is the post-travel report by Councillor Susan Riley, and I'm sorry to hear about the situation with the pooch that you experienced the other day. But on a serious matter, it's very important that the Lord Mayor, councillors and City of Melbourne staff travel overseas to international events and forums, and it's important that we build strong relationships with cities such as Chengdu in the Sichuan province, and it's important that we educate to Asia and China in particular. And having face-to-face discussions with Victorian government representatives and the mayor of Chengdu and other dignitaries in that magnificent city further establishes and enhances Melbourne's reputation on the international stage. We are an international city, and it is appropriate that we have councillors and the Lord Mayor travel overseas for these events. And we do thank Councillor Riley for spending her own time and energy to participate in this. She went out of her way to be involved in this. So we thank you for that.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy to move the motion that's on the screen. Is there a seconder? Deputy Lord Mayor, let me speak to it briefly. I echo Chris, and Chris, thank you once again for your unwavering support of productive travel on behalf of the city. You're a champion of it. The Mayor of Chengdu, of course, visited us in June of this year, and therefore for us to pay a return visit just a couple of months later is a sign of respect and accord given the MOU that we signed. The only other thing that I would suggest is that if they're seeking to connect with more cultural experiences, a number of possibilities are outlined here. With another hat on, the Royal Melbourne Hospital, I'd suggest that Corpus Medicorum, the medical orchestra, who could develop ties not just culturally but also scientifically, medically and in research senses, could be a good partner for Chengdu. But again, thank you in particular. This is far more, I think, a state-to-state Victoria-Sichuan connection than a Melbourne-Chengdu one, but nevertheless still a very valuable one, and I thank Councillor O'Reilly for undertaking it on our behalf. Deputy Lord Mayor.
I agree, Lord Mayor, and thanks to Councillor O'Reilly for her work, and I'll just briefly mention the fact that we know the Chinese market is so important to Melbourne, and just one measure of that is 1 million Chinese tourists coming to Victoria each year, and they're tipping that to grow to 3 million. So any links that we can continue to forge with China is money well spent.
Further contribution to debate? Councillor Liu.
Thank you. And I just wanted to echo the point. Chengdu is actually one of the most beautiful cities. I've never actually been, so I'm actually quite envious and jealous. It is the home to pandas. It's another emphasis on the fact that about tourism. And this year, which is the Australia-China Year of the Tourism, again, it just shows the amount of trade and also visitation. Melbourne is the most livable city in the world, and you know, it's a great marketing and brand, and it's a reason why we can always sell to cities such as Chengdu. I also want to highlight the thank you for, echoing about our WeChat, account. It's something that's very close to my heart, and the fact that we have one just demonstrates the fact that how we are understanding China and also the technology they use. So, hopefully, I'll get a chance to go to Chengdu and see the pandas and everything else. We welcome the relationship develop at the state level.
Further contribution to debate? In that case, I'll put the motion of those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. This concludes the items of general business for consideration. Any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we invite questions from the members of the public for the last 15 minutes of the meeting. Any questions for us? Shane.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I note that you and your team accepted campaign donations from Crown Director Harold Mitchell as well as the AHA in your last year's election. I'm wondering whether you, in the light of the poker machine motion before, whether you had considered excusing yourself from that debate.
We sought advice on that, Shane. For that very reason, and the advice to us from governance was unless there was a direct submission from one of those direct donors, then there was no conflict.
Thank you.
Any further questions for us? In that case, can I thank members of the public for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 6:36 p.m.